the kind of slip of the tongue that you won't find need to listen to a program called Radio Free Erin. It's on WBAI 99.5 FM. And that's a good way maybe to welcome fellow radio host Martin Galvin, who is the National and New York State Freedom for All Ireland, well, he's chairman, and chairman of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, as well as president of the Bronx AOH Division 5, and vice president of Bronx County AOH. Martin, you're very welcome indeed.
Thank you very much, Adrian. Great to be back with you.
Thank you. We might start at the beginning, and when this rabble rouser, Martin Galvin, came to lead what was, a fairly disorganized group of supporters for the freedom of Northern Ireland throughout the United States. You took the lead there in as one of the founders of Irish Northern Aid. Can you bring us back to that?
Well, actually, what had happened is there were people like Mike Flannery and others who had founded the organization, and of course, they had great advisors and people work with them, like people like Paul O'Dwyer and Frank Durkin. But in the 70s, what it was happening is there was a terrible protest. The British were moving to using the blanket protest. They were trying to crack down and brand Irish Republican prisoners as criminals. In Long Kesh, it was leading up to the situation, which we hope would not, but would lead to the hunger strike. And I was asked at that time, I was a member of Irish Northern Aid. When I finished law school, I was involved with a number of Irish organizations, including the American Committee for Ulster Justice and the AOH and Irish Northern Aid. But I was involved with Irish Northern Aid. They were the organization that was most condemned by the British government and feared by the British government. So that was the one I wanted to get most involved in. And in the late 1970s, we wanted to step up where there was a need to step up the publicity work about what was going on in Long Kesh. We helped to head off a hunger strike. And I was that time appointed to be the National Publicity Director and the editor of the Irish People Weekly newspaper. So that's how I got those two titles, and that's the position I held as the hunger strikes would begin and become a national effort in which thousands of people, it's hard to believe now, but thousands of people every day for months on end would come out in front of British consulates in New York and across the country to support the ultimately 10 men who would die on hunger strike. So that's how I first really began to get a name, become prominent in the way that you are.
Let me suggest, and I think you will agree, that at the very time that there was huge support, both moral and indeed financial support for Northern Aid, for NORAID, for the movement, which indeed was set up primarily to help the families of prisoners, that if you went back, never mind Britain, but if you did a survey throughout the island of Ireland, much of the Republic, a lot of people would kind of would hope that the Martin Galvins and the, you know, NORAID group would not do anything in terms of upsetting what they had become to accept is that there was a lot of stuff happening up in the north, and as long as it doesn't spill over into the south, we're ahead. That may be a crude way of putting it, but that was the reality of it.
No, Adrian, you're completely right. In fact, one of the ways in which I began to get more involved or more prominent within Irish Northern Aid was the Irish government at that time was actually trying to dissuade people from supporting the families of political prisoners, supporting the McBride principles, other initiatives like that. In fact, I was at something Dan Dennehy, who's been a guest on the show, his father had arranged. And I confronted, they had condemned Republicans, and I started to say, what about Magello O'Hare or other things? Why didn't you condemn the British government? And that was one of the things I got sort of picked at and said, you know, we should give this person more of a vocal role. But I'm very glad to say the last time that the Tánaiste was here, I was invited to a meeting. It was the first time I was ever invited to the Irish consulate. And I was able to say to him how we were very happy with, I certainly was very happy with some of the things that he's doing to support justice and freedom and people in the north of Ireland. And I'm glad we're at that position instead of the position where there would be a strike on RTE for 48 hours because they weren't allowed to interview me, or I was banned somehow for Section 31. Where the Irish government would, at one point, for example, they told Joe Roach, the national president of the AOH, not to, that if he came to an Irish Northern Aid event, he would be persona non grata, which, of course, he refused, and it was at that type of division. And I'm glad today that we're all working together to achieve justice and freedom for the rest of Ireland, and that. At the time when there were people in the north, there was so much a crackdown on civil rights, and where there were so many prisoners, where there were people dying on hunger strike because they wouldn't be branded as political as criminals, when there was a need for funds, when there was a need for publicity here, and the political work that I do with people like John Deary, one of the people that were honored, or with Paul O'Dwyer and Frank Durkin and so many others that led to President Clinton opening a visa for Gerry Adams and opening the whole door to a new change, a new dispensation in the north of Ireland. I thought it was right then to stand with those who were victims, that Irish people in the north had the same right to freedom as any other part of Ireland, and they were being denied it, and they were being suppressed and beaten and victimized because of it. And I'm proud that I did that at that time, and I'm glad to see that the Irish government is now working with us. And I refrain from saying that we, were, of course, were right and they were wrong at that time, but I'm glad we're all right together and working on the same path today.
And I'm glad that you're refrained from saying that. But anyway, let me ask you, Martin, about before we get to speak of somebody who, you know, has played such a role leading towards the Good Friday Agreement, say, in the person of John Deary, I just want to ask your opinion on the current state of affairs, you know, in Northern Ireland, the absence of an assembly, Brexit barreling down the road, and you know, whereas people like yourself and the Frank Durkins of you know, of the time were very you know, suspect of the Good Friday Agreement, and even when everybody thought, you know, on both sides of the Atlantic, this is the only path to peace in Northern Ireland. Now, we have a situation in the north which is not just volatile, but it's ready to, excuse the pun, it's ready to just blow up, to fall apart. What's your own view and those of your colleagues?
Well, I actually have to go back. I used to travel with Michael Flannery when I first became involved with Irish Northern Aid. He was the great former Grand Marshal of the Parade, and I want to congratulate Brian for looking forward to next year, of course. He told me one time, we discussed things in history, and he'd say, you know, when the treaty was signed, the whole issue, there was a civil war over the issue in Ireland, over the issue of recognizing or doing away with an Irish Republic or recognizing the British. But everybody thought that the North partition was not an issue because the British kept saying there's going to be this boundary commission, and Tyrone and Fermanagh are going to be united with the 26 counties and Derry City and so much and South Armagh, and it's all going to disappear, and we want to really get out. And then when that situation evolved, they found that the British changed their – they were totally the opposite, that they were dug in. They were not going to give an inch. And I was just concerned that – the Good Friday Agreement would end up, it would deliver peace, but I was concerned if somebody believes very much in freedom for the north of Ireland, that that's the only way to get real justice and real civil rights, because it doesn't need the discrimination, the sectarianism that the British need to stay in the north. I was just very concerned that the British were not going to implement that agreement in good faith. They were not going to let an assembly go forward in which the DUP, the unionists, work with nationalists, would do away, would lose their distrust of a united Ireland, would gradually move towards, do away with the injustices, gradually move peaceably towards a united Ireland. And it seems now that the British government wants to nail, they haven't opened the door to unification. They want to nail that shut. People are talking about a united Ireland within 5 years. We're talking now hoping we'll get some kind of referendum or a poll within 5 years. Legacy. I'm having people coming out from Ballymurphy, who's 11 of them murdered, the Ballymurphy massacre in 1971, are trying to get American pressure on the inquest to give them truth. We have Brexit, which is just a disaster, to try and draw a hard border across Ireland, 300 border crossings. It's just a disaster for everybody in every way, and the DUP would rather have that. They say it's a blood-red line than have some preferential treatment for the north that would not result in a hard border. All of those things, the refusal of a border poll, all of those things seem to indicate that the British government, once again, is not going to implement the agreement in good faith. It's not going to go forward and allow it to move as it should have moved long ago towards a united Ireland to remove the injustices and sectarian system. And that's why people like me are still feel that American pressure, the type of thing that we used to do in the United States through the AOH, which believes in freedom for Ireland, the other groups that are involved in that, that is as crucial as it ever was. Let's push the British government further to take the final steps to do justice, to give justice, and give freedom for all of Ireland.
I don't think it was expected or indeed accepted as anywhere during the peace process and since the Good Friday Agreement that there was a right time to put most of the issues in the north, because of the peace process, to put them to one side and definitely talking about the unification of Ireland, that was stretching it, that there were a lot of other issues to be sorted out before then. One might ask, at this particular time, when the uncertainty of where Northern Ireland is going to, sit when Brexit indeed actually happens a few months from now, why would you and those who have dedicated their lives towards peace and towards again taking on the British with respect to how Northern Ireland has been treated, of all the times that there would be a movement for the unification of Ireland, there are many who would say, God, this is definitely not the time to stir the pot.
Well, according to the British, we haven't had a right time for the past 800 years, and I'm sure they'd be quite happy to say, well, we shouldn't have one for the next 800. Why do you have a situation like Brexit when Ireland is clearly one country, should be one country, where people in Derry and Tyrone should have the same rights to equal citizenship in a government that recognizes them as Irish citizens, regardless of religious or other differences, that doesn't need a sectarian system, that doesn't need to deny the truth to those who were victimized? Why can't those people, when will it ever be a right time? to just even have a poll, an election, something that recognizes their rights that can move towards unification. The problems that we now have an assembly or no assembly, because you get people who are encouraged by the British government to support them, to give them a veto, to indulge them, not to respect nationalist representatives, in which they will just say no to justice for on legacy issues, in which they will say no, even an Irish Language Act, one similar to something that exists in Scotland, something similar to exist in Wales, but the Irish people can have one in the north of Ireland. You get people going home to places like Fermanagh or Inniskillen or Derry City and say there's no Irish heritage here, and don't even realize that the very places where they live, Irish, the Irish language, Irish words are embedded in those very places. We'll never, ever have a resolution of the problems in the north until we get away from the main problem in the north, which is British rule needs artificial divisions and injustices. And if we could peacefully move forward, if we could get away from that, show people who are now voters for the DUP or any party that they have an equal right, an equal pace, an equal welcome in a 32-county Ireland that they are entitled to as of right, that is the only time that will do away with the problems of the past and the problems of the future, because we've done away with the cause of those problems.
Now, there are many who would say, of course, that to get Martin Galvin, you know, hot under the collar, you know, it doesn't take that much. But let me tell you, you've said what you've had to say, and I think you do represent a goodly number of people, you know, on our side of the Atlantic who might say, you know, things are very good in the north, in Northern Ireland, and there are so many other conflicts throughout the world, you know, and we're here wondering whether, you know, one nuke coming from North Korea, or for that matter, now the list is growing. Why and what can we do right now to support those in Northern Ireland, including, of course, the efforts for the unification of Ireland? To many here, Martin Galvin, the problems of Northern Ireland have pretty much gone away or definitely moved to the back burner.
Well, the problems have gone to the back burner for many here, but they haven't gone to the back burner for those who have to live with those problems day and daily. You have people who have been fighting for justice about Ballymurphy, a massacre that occurred in 1971. They've been fighting for justice for 47 years. You have hundreds of people who are denied the truth. One of my closest friends, Liam Ryan, an American citizen, went back to Ireland, worked for Con Ed, went back to Ireland, bought a bar, was assassinated, got no truth. His family has gotten no truth. You have people who are denied an Irish Language Act. You have people, we can't even have an assembly simply because the Democratic Unionist Party will not sit in an assembly without saying, well, if you go here, we're happy to sit with you, except you can't have any of the main issues that you want, even an Irish Language Act, much less legacy justice or any of the other crucial issues. So we're all for peace. I'm certainly for peace. We're talking about a political way forward. I know earlier this year in January, Mark Thompson from Relatives for Justice came out to the United States, was here for 5 days. It was an emergency tour. 16 members of Congress, led by Joe Crowley and others, signed a letter to the British ambassador. That put tremendous pressure on the British government. Not only the British ambassador in Washington, but the British secretary, Karen Bradley, had a reply. They are very concerned about American congressmen, American political leaders, and Americans simply going back, monitoring what's going on, and trying to bring peaceful political pressure on what the British are doing in the north, peaceful political pressure behind those who are still denied freedom and justice in the north of Ireland. So we can have a tremendous impact. John Deary showed we could have a tremendous impact with the whole peace process and visas, and I'm just as Freedom for All Ireland Chair of the Ancient Order of Hibernians and working with other groups like the Unity Conference of Brehons and so many other groups, trying to work to get back to that, to put American pressure back on the British, to get the people in the North back what they're entitled to, a real peace based on real freedom and equal citizenship and justice for everybody in every corner of Ireland.
Martin Galvin, my guest, has indeed, friends, I think, throughout the decades, and definitely since 1992, he has been a leader in fact, reminding all of us that John Deary's efforts, going back to the American, political candidates, that the presidential candidates address Irish agenda issues. And it's not a stretch to say that, John Deary's efforts and, it opened the door for many things, for Sinn Féin visas, for the appointment of the special envoy, Senator George Mitchell, and brought such a dramatic change to Northern Ireland. With the passage of time, I think this is not, unique to John Deary or indeed to many. There, as time goes by, many people who were supporters of such movements have a tendency to, to exaggerate their involvement. But I think it is more than appropriate, indeed, to acknowledge that there was a leader, one leader at the time, who thought, that it wasn't just all right for the rest of us to be saying it's a shame that American politicians don't, pay much attention to Northern Ireland. Take us to that point.
You're exactly right, Adrian. When I first started attending Irish events, there was a speech you heard at almost everyone. Someone would get up and say, why don't our politicians pay attention to the north of Ireland the way they do to Israel or Poland or South Africa? Whatever country was in the news at that time, that's the one they would point to. And everybody would clap and cheer. And nobody did anything about it. John Deary actually came forward and say the reason that we don't get American politicians paying attention to Ireland is that we haven't showed them that we care enough to make them do so or to let them do so based on the fact they know that it'll gain support for them. And I'm very proud. We'll be honoring John a week from Sunday, October 21st, 3 to 7 p.m. at the Rambling House Party Room. That's at Katona Avenue, 236th Street in Woodlawn, along with Father Brendan Fitzgerald. He's the pastor of St. Barnabas, along right. with Sean Pender, along with the National Treasurer of the AOH, along with Dolores Desch. But I cannot – I've read books about how the peace process started. I've seen people taking credit for it. And really, the person that I would credit and open the door to everything was John Deary. He started out putting the issue of a special envoy on the agenda. He had an individual named Jack Irwin that you may remember at the AOH. We would get somebody in to every presidential and candidate forum that you're allowed and say, could we ask this one question? Would you, if you're a president, appoint a special envoy? And that's how it happened. So we put that issue on the agenda. He then started to get candidates forums, and when John Deere first started these, he would plead, organize, do everything he could to tell the Irish community how important that it was that they attend these forums, show these candidates that were there, and he would say, look, you came out on the streets in the hunger strike. There were thousands of you on the streets every day. You showed them there that there is an interest in these issues. Come to the candidates' forums, and candidates will come and try and get your vote. And in the beginning, I can remember forums where I think the first one I went to, Peter King was on the Right to Life Party in New York City or New York. Yeah. He was the only candidate. There were a couple of aides who came. Almost no one came. And he kept on. I remember an event he had in Chicago when no candidates came. But gradually, people said, oh, we could never do that. Don't bother to show up. And gradually, John worked on it. He had his staff worked on it when he was an assemblyman. He built it up. It took years, but gradually he would get to the point where not only Jerry Brown, but candidate Bill Clinton realized they had to come to a presidential forum in 1992. And the issues, I had worked on visa denial for Sinn Féin. That was one of the key issues. The case of Joe Daugherty, the deportees, extraditions, that was a key issue. The McBride principles, that was a key issue. Editors of all the papers, Ray O'Hanlon and myself, were picked, among others, to ask questions. And I was told they were presented, they would get these questions. Then one of them was a visa denial. And when Bill Clinton said he would offer a visa, open the door to Sinn Féin and allow discussions, I think that more than anything else opened the door to a visa that would happen 2 years later, to the whole priest process that would follow. When Clinton won the New York primary after doing that, he recognized that this is a good issue for him. This is something, and even now, that is, he would base his entire, I think if he was asked to cite the achievements of his legacy as president, doing that, Ireland would have been a key issue. But it was all the many political forums that John Deary had, the many times we were heartbroken at the fact that there weren't a number of candidates. The effort that he put together, the effort that he held us together when we had disappointments, and finally brought the Irish community again and again until people like Clinton would have to address those issues. To me, that is a tremendous achievement, one for which the Irish community and people in Ireland owe him a tremendous debt, one for which it should never be forgotten, and one for which I'm happy to be honoring him again a week from tomorrow, 3 to 7 at the Ramley House. Admission is only $30. It's going to be a great event. And anytime I can talk to John Deary and remind him, as we are reminding him now in this program, of what he did for the Irish community with those years of effort to put together those forums, bring politicians down. And, you know, we may need more of that. Pat Daugherty was talking to him, the person who worked on the McBride principles, saying, we need to do that now. Push the British that way. That may be another example. But I will, whenever I get the chance, talk about John Deary. I'm proud to be able to honor him for that initiative, for the McBride principles in New York State, which was the Deary Flynn bill, for all the work that he did and should never be forgotten.
And I'm glad that you mentioned, for those who may not know, that John Deary was indeed a very well-known leading assembly for the Irish community for 20 years. And indeed, he and Flynn did introduce the McBride principles at a time, when the in New York State legislators were saying, listen, we have bigger fish to fry here. I'm equally proud, of course, of the fact that for more than 20 years, John Deary was co-host of this program, and I'm extremely proud of my friend, of our friend, John Deary. By the way, on the McBride principles, the Yonkers City Council, due to the AOH efforts, have adopted the McBride principles. Repeating, of course, the first to adopt McBride principles. Martin, next Sunday, you
a
have
week from today, October 21st. 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Ramley House. It's at the corner of 236th Street and Katona Avenue in the Bronx. It's handy to drive. Well, parking's difficult, but it's near the Deegan. It's near the Bronx River Parkway, and it's near the Metro North Station. For tickets, you can call at 718-994-1410. It's $30. It's a very relaxed afternoon. It's a great afternoon, and we're going to be honoring Father Brendan Fitzgerald, the pastor of St. Barnabas, Sean Pender, Dolores Dash from Albany, but we're going to be honoring our good friend, your co-host for many years, as you say, and somebody who really deserves it. Could never say enough about what we owe him to the Irish community, John Deary.
Martin, again, thanks for joining us here. And for your own program, and for indeed a fiery program, as we've gotten a little taste of you, of course, your co-host there, WBAI, and that's on Saturdays. You don't clash with mine.
It is usually on Saturdays at 12 noon, 99.5 FM, or you get it on the computer by WBAI.org and go to the archives. We're not on for this week, in the next couple of weeks, and co-host is John McDonough, and I should have also mentioned Pat Farley was one of the editors of the Irish papers asking those questions of Bill Clinton and
Absolutely.
The others. I don't want to leave him out. He was with the Irish Voice, of course. Adrian, thank you very much. I'm always grateful for a chance to talk about our friend John Deary, and I'm going to be really grateful to be able to honor him 1 week from tomorrow, October 21st. And in the Irish community, I can't think, there are many people deserve to be honored, but John Deary is up at the top of the list.
Hear, hear. I absolutely agree. Martin Galvin, thanks again. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. This is the Flannelly Show, and we're coming to you live from New York City, simulcasting worldwide, so wherever you are, in any place in the world, if you're waking up or going to bed or whatever, we want to acknowledge and say hello to you. Also, of course, we would like to let you know that interviews such as, and including the interview there with Martin Galvin, are archived. So if there is an interview from today, from last week, from last month, last year, 10 years ago, just log on to irishradio.com and you can hear that interview. Okay, we're going to be heading to Ireland in a couple of minutes, but I, again, not that Martin Galvin hasn't publicized it into the ground, but I just want to let you know, friends, that that's AOH Division 5, Woodlawn. And it's an awards benefit, Spirit of 1916. Father Brendan Fitzgerald, Man of the Year, Sean Pender, AOH, National Treasurer, Dolores Desch, Ladies Ancient Order of Hibernians, New York State Freedom of All Ireland, the chair, and again, John Deary, a special award, for his founding and indeed successful Irish presidential reforms, which resulted in a special envoy to Northern Ireland, Senator George Mitchell, and the MacBride principles. All are welcome. I want to give you information. Tickets, 718-994-1410. Music by Gerald Susan Corbett. And again, that's 718-994-1410, the Rambling House next Sunday. Let's go to Ireland.